It is time for the Media Beat with David Tarachuk. David joins us on a Friday morning. We rebroadcast David, of course, over the weekend and also on right after our 12 noon news. I don't believe it is on Monday, but he joins us live on a Friday morning, and he's with us this morning. Good morning, David.
Well, it's good to be with you again, reporting in from the media capital of the world, New York City. How are you?
Well, we're doing okay up here. I mean, we are sitting here in the Northeast now looking out at the rest of the country who didn't learn any lessons at all from what happened in the Northeast. But we can save that for a few minutes. It's funny, though, sitting here and seeing what nobody learned from what happened in New York.
Well, yes, New York, the epicenter for a long time of COVID-19, and lots of other states didn't lock down as much as we did, and of course many others were doing so very much later, opened up again very much earlier, and those early openers are quite evidently now paying the price for that. At one point, Texas's governor was saying that the one option they wouldn't be doing was closing down again. Well, it looks like they are closing down again. At least the way the governor is describing it is the opening up has been put on pause. Lessons learned is a phrase we often apply in crisis situations. In this case, it's lessons not learned, unfortunately.
All right. Well, you know, your column, David, has, of course, the MediaBeat.us, which is his website. He also is a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. But on your MediaBeat this week, I want to read this off because I find it very interesting. It sounds like a voiceover for the beginning of a disaster movie. Listen to this.
That's the way I write sometimes, I'm afraid, and especially in turbulent times like this. But no, go ahead. Which part are you quoting?
It's great. Here we go. A world inflamed over racial injustice, rampant disease wrecking worldwide havoc, but provoking feckless denial and inaction from authorities, many populations, livelihoods in ruins. At such a time, the transformed media ecosystem must assuredly take serious stock of its responsibilities. It really sounds like something you would see leading into a disaster movie. And, you know, but what you point out here is absolutely true. We have you can describe it as global mayhem on many different levels. And it seems like, yes, there are a few media outlets doing the job correctly, but it seems like, wow, we are just bogged down in this incredible mire, and it looks like the media doesn't know what place to go, what place to look for.
It's certainly very challenging, yes. There's a lot of hand-wringing been going on in our industry, the industry and the profession of journalism, over the last 15, 20 years, heightening as time goes on, about how much we are doing our job, how much and how well we are exerting the responsibilities that fall upon us. And now that those responsibilities are so much more increased by this atmosphere of crisis that has overtaken us, I think that hand-wringing has gotten to very extreme terms. And there's much to be concerned about. The main thing that I'm tackling here, what I'm doing, in fact, is responding to an annual report that comes out from one of the world's biggest news agency, Reuters, the famous one based in London, but with strong European connections, especially to Switzerland. But the Reuters is not just a news agency. It also has an institute, the Reuters Institute, which is based at Oxford University in England. Its job basically is to do real-life research into the media and conduct very strongly data-based policy reviews. And in some ways, I think we could claim it to be to act as the industry's and the profession's conscience. And its annual report has just come out, the digital news report. It emphasizes, of course, the newer trends in media. It emphasizes digital news. Though some of its observations can be made about other ways of distributing the journalism which is put out worldwide, and the particular area that I wanted to zero in on really in their report is the question that all this hand-wringing is often directed at is the erosion of trust in the main media that has clearly been taking place. It's documented well in this report, and of course it comes out every year, so you can see the progress, if that's the right word, for the erosion of people's trust in the media. And it's examined very carefully and subtly and pointedly by this review. We're losing trust. We as journalists, we're losing trust amongst people. But the interesting thing is, there are 40 countries involved in this research project of Reuters, and the trust in media has been damagingly eroded. That is clear. As the great wave of public polarization has happened, not just in this country, not just in places like Poland and India, where it's often reported on, but almost worldwide, the phenomenon of people retreating into divided camps, and as a result, no citizen in the world, I don't think at the moment, would be surprised by the notion that the media is less trusted than it used to be. When the Reuters people were polling people in those 40 countries earlier this year, and I should say a lot of this work was done before COVID-19 made its total impact upon the world at large. So back in January, for instance, some polling was done as part of this year's report, and you got fewer than 4 in 10 people worldwide, at 38%, said that they trust most news most of the time. That's rather dispiriting. It's a drop of 4% since the same poll was taken last year. And this is a somewhat surprising thing to me. Even when you ask people about the news media that they deliberately choose themselves to take their news from, the trust level that they have in that section of the media, the section that they've chosen themselves to read or to watch or to listen to, is less than half anyway. It's 46%. That's a substantial registering of discontent. And it's clear that political polarization lies at the heart of this. And I should also say that the organizations that seem to bear the brunt of this are public broadcasting organizations like ourselves, like NPR, the network, and PBS, the network, and in Britain, the BBC and ZDF in Germany. And what's clear is that it's with them, it's very clear that people from both the far right, no, not just the far right, but it's people on the right and people on the left of the political spectrum are fairly equally, fairly equally left and right, who are losing faith in these institutions. But what is also interesting is that the virus has played a very interesting role in interrupting that trend. Later on, come April, when COVID-19 was quite definitely worldwide, the whole atmosphere, I think, had changed completely. You've got, in particular, news about the media, media news about the virus seems to be changing people's perception of the media and their trust in it. Public trust in old-style media was more than twice the level registered for all the new media outlets when it came to getting information about COVID-19. Social networks, video platforms, or messaging services, the like. That was way down, and yet traditional media is way up. In the words of the Reuters Institution Director, Rasmus Nielsen, he said the coronavirus is reminding people of the value of traditional news sources. That's an interesting change.
Well, what's interesting about what you're saying, and it involves the media, but it also involves the political parties in this country and around the world, the way they handle things. In the United States, it used to be, and the media tried to force this upon the Trump administration, but wasn't successful. It used to be that when you had something like this, your daily briefings would be from the CDC, would be from these organizations, the World Health Organizations, whoever you want, our own organizations. They would be holding these press conferences with doctors, with physicians, and with academia, and also scientific experts. But in this country, that wasn't the case. And when the media kept asking the questions about reality, and the president kept shuffling around and really controlling the stage, it was set up that the media had to go out and do their job another way. Now, not everybody did it terrifically, but a majority did, because the word had to get out, basically, that scientists and physicians were all united in the same world, that something had to be done, that the face masks really do work, that social distancing really does work, and you have the President of the United States really just going against that. So I think that's where the media finally took foothold against the White House and the way its press operations and the President worked. The media finally stood its ground and said, enough is enough.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think it's not true universally, of course. A lot of the media were still stuck in the idea that the White House would be the main focus for reporting on how we were doing with COVID-19, which, of course, turned out to be very unreliable overall. But nonetheless, particularly, again, the divided, the partisan elements of the media stuck with the institution, the institutional way of reporting it through the White House, and of course, ignoring in a sense the fact that the White House was not the most reliable source of information here. But how that fits into the overall survey that the overall conclusions that the survey I've been looking at indicates is that America does seem once again, I think, to be an exception in the world at large, over and above the COVID crisis itself. I mean, this Reuters survey shows that worldwide, it's still a majority, 60%, in other words, in this case, still prefers news that is objective. It's only a minority internationally, only 28%, who prefer news that shares or reinforces people's own views. The bubble that we often talk about in our slot here, you people are only hearing what they want to hear. but it's America that shows the biggest tendency towards the bubble staying with what they only what they want to hear. It's in the United States where partisan preferences have most perceptibly grown. But and this is what I want to glean for emphasis out of the Reuters assessment is that that growth in partisanship is nowhere near as great as we might be led to think. I mean, it turns out that the proportion, when you look at this survey really carefully, the proportion of Americans who say they prefer news that shares their own point of view has increased, yes. But it's only increased 6 percentage points over the past 7 years. Now, it's bad, I think. It's bad that it's increasing. But it's not increasing as much as you might think when you take a cursory look at the extremes. If you flip channels, for instance, between MSNBC and Fox, and if that's your primary diet, or if cable news is your primary diet, you'll get a notion that all of media is now squabbling amongst itself from one extreme to another. And it's not true, is what I'm saying. It's not as true as it seems to be. And the Institute's analysis is interesting that even in a country like ours, where fierce partisanship does seem to be ruling the day, there's still what it calls a silent majority. I'm not sure it's the right phrase to use with all its echoes of Richard Nixon and his appeal to his silent majority. But there is a large slice of the public, striking 60%, that still says that it favors news that at least tries to be objective. And when Reuters dug deep into this, doing qualitative interviews about their statistical polling results, shows that the Americans who want facts and just the facts and to be allowed to make up their own minds about what they've read and come to their own conclusions without being unduly influenced by the pitching of the news organization they're getting it from, these people are still a majority. I mean, it's not an overwhelming majority, it's 60%. But that's what the majority of Americans want, it seems, factual journalism that they can rely on. Just as you were saying, and the journalist had to respond to that demand in the COVID-19 crisis and stop having to rely and on the fountainhead of information from the White House, which is clearly diluted, distorted, and overtaken by the megalomania of the Oval Office.
I look back on American news outlets, and I'm going to put a little of the blame on Rune Arledge here. When Rune Arledge took over ABC Sports,
famous sports director at ABC, and then of course news director,
and he directed the news department in a totally different manner now than news. It was more news never really counted. Never counted on anything but making money for networks. Believe it or not, they were just totally. They were separate. They were separate entities in networks, and they operated independently. Then along came Fox, and all of a sudden, news departments have just decided to take a lane and go for that audience, whether it was Fox, whether it was ABC, whether it was CNN. CBS didn't really do anything like that, but all of a sudden, news programming became like regular programming, where networks would take lanes to reach certain viewers with certain shows. News isn't like that, and that's what the basic, when you write the story for American news, that's what the bottom line is going to be. News is not like a program that has singing and dancing or comedy or excitement or now these stupid real-life shows where supposedly you're watching things happen as they happen. News is not supposed to go for any particular lane. It's meant to put out news, and that news is put out for everybody. And that changed. Fox changed that global positioning of news instantaneously in the United States of America?
Well, not instantaneously, but yes, very, very fast, because they took a hold of that trend that you may be right in attributing to Ru Knowledge and putting in the sports broadcasting ethos into news. And so we've ended up with that awful creature called infotainment. But you know, I'm aware too that the seriousness of our current situation has meant, it would seem from the Reuters information anyway, to have made people pause and think about that in terms of reconsidering what exactly it is that they want. I mean, since COVID-19, what's clear is that partisan websites, those that you know, catered, as you say, for people's own lanes, partisan websites and TV brands too have shown stagnant or low growth in traffic compared with other sources. When it comes to getting news about COVID-19, what you're finding that very specifically publications like the Daily Caller on the right and Truthdig on the left, you know, these kind of niche and very highly partisan organs of information have been recording flatlining or falling, indeed, falling page views, numbers of page views. Well, meanwhile, the New York Times and the Washington Post websites have both increased their traffic. I mean, in just one snapshot, in over 1 month, they climbed by more than 50%. That was the month of April. So maybe things are not quite so bad after all for the hardworking journalist who's striving for unbiased coverage. It seems to be what a majority still, as I was saying earlier, a majority of American news consumers want. They want unbiased coverage.
You know, it's interesting because there are a lot of young journalists out there. Well, I'm 67, so anybody under 50 to me is considered young. But there are a lot of young journalists out there that are learning, I think, from this whole pandemic coverage, and that are learning the meaning of true reporting, which is not just taking something off of a social media site and trying to turn it into a news story, but you generate that news story and then let the social media sites take their slants and their cuts off of it, because what you've put together is an accurate representation through reporting, and that is actually going out and asking questions and getting answers from various people. I do see that happening with this pandemic coverage. In the beginning, people kind of assailed young reporters for asking questions over and over and over, and people were saying, well, why do we do this? They're asking the same questions over and over. They're asking those questions because they want to get the correct answers.
It's what reporters do, yes, yeah. And of course, in journalism, in its essence, can be very tedious. And you know, if you're just reporting the news, it can be repetitive and unvaried. However, if you don't do that basic slog, you don't get the truth. And if you just let the information be spoon-fed to you by highly selective originators, or they're not really originators. A lot of the time, they're aggregators. The people are controlling the media, are pulling the information together from sources that they don't have any responsibility for themselves. So you cannot vouch for we cannot vouch for the accuracy of what we're getting. Thoroughgoing journalism that checks and double checks its own fact finding is, of course, a higher order. And you know, we have to recognize that in the process of doing this, it's expensive. A lot of the time, social media has established in people's minds the idea that information is a free commodity. Well, it is, but it's expensive to produce, authoritatively. and that's one thing that I hope will be part of the sort of possibly thin silver lining that I'm looking for in the COVID experience. I think it one silver lining element of this awful mayhem is that people are definitely relearning the value of solid, difficult, hard-worked journalism, which, of course, carries a cost. If you want good information, you sometimes have to pay for it. In fact, most of the time, you have to pay for it in one form or another.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because I'll wrap this up by saying Jill and I were sitting here at the beginning of this pandemic, and we decided to do something to help local newspapers, and that we started a website called Robin Hood Radio Daily Bugle. And what we put on that website is an aggregation of news headlines from every local newspaper we could find. We have the Republican American, we have the Litchfield County Times, we have the Lakeville Journal, the Millerton News, Hudson Valley News Network up in New York, the Berkshire Eagle and the Berkshire Edge in Massachusetts. And we put up their headlines on local stories and links to the actual story. Now, if there's a paywall, we urge people to pay the $3 a month.
What a novel idea. Yeah, yes. Yeah,
You know, because we want to send people to these sites, so we still have these newspapers around, because the world without local newspapers covering local and regionally local news will be a sorry place to live in.
Well, that's a noble thing to do, because, yes, we know the decline is affecting local journalism more than any other kind of journalism completely. And, To assert faith in the fact-based ecosystem of journalism is a very important thing to do, and because if we don't have it, then can you imagine living permanently in a world in which the kind of three-ring circus that the White House was providing for us in much of the time, at a time of extreme seriousness, that's the kind of thing we could end up living with permanently and in all areas.
And we'll end it with that impressive note, David. We'll speak to you again next week.
Look forward to that. Bye-bye now.
Take care. David Terechuk with The Media Beat. Of course, you can find him on the web, themediabeat.us.